Welcome to the Christian Science Monitor. I'm Philip Moore for Radio Reading Services. This week I'm reading from the June 17th, 2019 edition of the Christian Science Monitor Weekly. The cover feature this week, How Trees Save Cities. Preserving urban forest affects everything from crime rates to home values to utility bills. The story is by Stephanie Haynes. As is our habit each week, let's first begin with an introductory article by editor Mark Sappenfield. His column this week, Finding Our Balance. Just for a second, turn back to the cover and look at those two photos of Baltimore. I'm going to do my best to describe the two photos now on the cover of this week's Christian Science Monitor Weekly. There are two photographs, one on the top, one on the bottom. The bottom photograph is by far more stark. Both photographs show row houses or apartment buildings. I think row house is the correct term. Apartment buildings that share walls. The bottom photograph, as I said, is more stark. It shows a neighborhood that has been allowed to deteriorate. The fronts of the buildings show a lot of deterioration and bricks exposed, rotting wood, windows that have been boarded up or are missing altogether. There is very little sign of anybody of living in the houses. The only greenery is weeds growing in the cracks in the sidewalk. What little remains of the foliage in front of the houses has turned brown in most cases. There are signs either for sale or cautioning people not to enter buildings. One of the locations actually looks like there might have been a fire in one of the locations. Now, contrast with the top photograph, I'm not sure that it shows exactly the same location, but at least in both photographs, there are row houses. The top photograph is of big contrast. In the center of the street is a green space that divides the larger street into two sections, lined with very tall trees that are very green and leafy. The front yards of the building of the homes are green. The homes are very well kept, and there are signs of people living in the homes. Suffice it to say, in my opinion, there is a huge contrast, as editor Sappenfield's article will point out. Now back to editor Sappenfield's column, Finding Our Balance. I'm going to pick up where I left off. If I asked you simply to say the first thing that came to your mind, we would all surely say about 100 different things. But the first thing that comes into my mind is balance. Admittedly, I grew up playing in the woods of northern Michigan, and the things I remember most about my reporting trip to Kashmir are the stately chenar trees. Think maples, but massive. I like trees. But I think most would agree that the bottom picture on our cover this week looks severe, regardless of the state of the houses. Concrete and brick have taken over. The green in the picture almost looks insurgent, as though it has had to stage a rebellion. This is a portrait of imbalance. This week's cover story talks about the clear value of trees in urban environments. They save energy by providing shade. An urban tree census suggests that in places where, with more trees, there is less crime and better mental health. Studies have repeatedly shown that humans need nature. Poet Robert Frost dreamed of being a swinger of birches, flinging himself outward, feet first, with a swish, kicking his way down through the air to the ground. Today, programs have sprung up across the United States to address a, quote, nature deficit among urban residents who have never swung on a birch. But the two pictures on this cover this week are also about more than finding balance just in individual lives and locales. The pictures speak to the need to apply that thinking more broadly in a time of wide concern about climate change. Environmental conversations can easily become as polarized as our politics. But for all the acrimony between crusaders and skeptics, all the policy proposals and United Nations reports, the ultimate goal is finding balance. One of the more alarming recent environmental studies made this point. After suggesting that 1/8 of the world's species faced extinction, the study pivoted to question ever-increasing material consumption. That's in quotes. As a May 20th editorial in the Monitor Weekly noted, the assertion is that humanity has become imbalanced, now tilting toward consumption over conservation. The idea of balance is deeply rooted across faiths and cultures. Gautama Buddha wrote of the middle way to enlightenment. Islamic thinker Wahb ibn Munabib counseled, if you hold one of the ends, the other will be skewed. If you hold the middle, the two ends will be balanced. For Christians, prophecy said, Christ would come only when, quote, every valley shall be exalted, and every mountain and hill shall be made low, and the crooked shall be made straight, and the rough places plain, end of quote. Where is the right balance between consumption and conservation? Future innovations could change the question, as the Green Revolution of the 1960s and 70s did, when it found new ways to feed billions more people. But climate change is forcing the question of where, as societies, our balance of thought is, and whether it has become skewed. Editor Mark Sappenfield can be reached at his email address, editor@csmonitor.com. Now for this week's cover story by Stephanie Haynes, Saving City Forest, Baltimore. From his headquarters office, Eric Deal drives into what has become one of the most monitored forests in the United States. He begins to point out the trees. There is a tulip poplar, as big as ones George Washington planted at Mount Vernon. There are the blossoming cherries, with a cotton candy display that rivals their famous compatriots down the road at the Tidal Basin in Washington, D.C. And there is a white oak, Maryland's state tree, with its branches gnarling horizontally for yards. This is a good-sized one, he says, getting out of his truck to pace the area of shade created by the tree's canopy. I'd be surprised if it was less than 150 years old. A few blocks away, someone lays on a horn, and traffic begins to move along one of the city's main arteries. Construction vehicles beep as they repair an old municipal reservoir. And Mr. Deal jumps back into his truck, ready to show more trees. Mr. Deal's forest is in the city. He is the arborist and the head of forestry for the city of Baltimore, which means he monitors all the trees here, those growing in shady parks, in metal grates, along busy streets, in backyards, and in relatively untouched forest patches dotting the municipality. Together, these trees make up what is called the city's urban forest, a type of ecosystem that is gaining attention at both the national and international levels among everyone from environmentalists to politicians, social justice advocates to corporations. With concern growing about climate change and rapid worldwide urbanization, city forests have emerged as one widely touted solution to a host of social and environmental challenges. Municipalities from Barcelona, Spain, to Melbourne, Australia, to Chicago, have put urban canopy coverage at the center of their long-term strategic plans. Community groups focusing on planting, maintaining, and saving trees have blossomed across the U.S. In 2015, the World Economic Forum's Global Agenda Council on the Future of Cities named increasing green canopy coverage as one of its top 10 urban initiatives. Yet, at the same time, the U.S. Forest Service, which in the past decade has also upped its focus on urban forest, has found that American cities are losing trees, and quickly. A Forest Service report published last year found that across the U.S., populated areas lost about 175,000 acres of trees per year between 2009 and 2014, or approximately 36 million trees per year. 45 states have a net decline in tree cover in these areas, with 23 of those states experiencing significant decreases. Meanwhile, urban regions showed a particular decline, along with an increase of what the researchers call, quote, impervious surfaces, in other words, concrete. But not, it turns out, in Baltimore. Here, the net tree canopy coverage has increased. Not by a lot, Mr. Deal is quick to point out, only from 27% of the city's land coverage to 28%. And not because Baltimore hasn't lost trees, it has. But overall, the tree canopy here has grown, which means that Mr. Deal has found himself presiding over one of the more successful efforts in the U.S. to preserve and improve the urban forest. It's become an improbable green model for cities around the world. Trees have been in cities, of course, for centuries. Documents from early New England settlements include rules and regulations about how residents should make use of trees growing in town commons. Many municipalities appointed tree wardens to make sure everyone followed the law. Even the modern concept of urban forestry has been around since the 1960s, when officials in the Johnson administration looked toward nature, and trees in particular, to help revitalize urban landscapes that they perceived to be crumbling. But in recent years, scientists say demographic trends have shifted attention toward the urban forest in a new way. Across the world, there is a rapid and increasing movement of people from rural areas to cities. In 2009, the United Nations estimated that 3 million people worldwide move to a city every week. By 2015, more than half of the world's population lived in urban areas, according to the UN, with the number of city dwellers expected to grow from 3.9 billion to 6.7 billion by 2050. The same is true in the U.S. More than 80% of Americans live in urban areas, even though cities account for only 3.6% of the country's land mass. At the same time, new technology has let researchers better understand the urban ecosystem, not just how trees thrive or fail in the city, but how they intersect with humans. They impact work productivity, wildlife habitats, air pollution removal, carbon sequestration, energy use, says David Nowak, senior scientist with the U.S. Forest Service, who has authored the recent national report on tree canopy loss. We might as well work with the forest. Nature is giving us this amazing resource. We should be smart about this whole process and use nature to make our lives better. Much of the understanding of how exactly trees affect everything from climate to criminal justice stems from a technological breakthrough pioneered in Baltimore. For decades, scientists recorded their data on paper, filling notebooks and filing cabinets, With the advent of computers, foresters were able to tabulate and analyze the information in a new way. By the 1990s, satellite imagery allowed governmental agencies such as NASA to produce visible images of Earth and to show on various scales where trees existed. But there was a limit to those pictures, explains Morgan Grove, a scientist with the U.S. Forest Service who has worked in Baltimore since 1999. Because the data were recorded in pixels, not physical parcels, it was difficult to identify, say, the owner of a particular tree, or to compare what was happening from one city block to another. In 2006, though, the Forest Service, working with researchers from the University of Vermont Spatial Analysis Lab, put together a new type of land cover map in Baltimore, using a combination of aerial imagery, light-reflecting technology, and high-resolution landowner data. This novel approach not only allowed a closer look at trees, it also let scientists synchronized forest maps with other information that was also newly computerized and manipulatable. Everything from health records to census figures, crime statistics to property values. Now we can talk about trees and how they relate to our other systems, Mr. Grove says. Our ability to combine data systems in novel ways, we couldn't do that 30 years ago. The insights revealed some striking trends. Crime declined when tree canopy coverage went up. Temperatures spiked in areas with fewer trees, an effect known as heat island. And with more trees, housing values increased. With parcel by parcel data, officials could see precisely where trees had been removed and where canopy had increased. They could zoom in on a particular block or even a house and see which trees existed there, as well as the age, health, and size of the stock. They could also determine how much carbon sequestration, cooling effect, and crime mitigation any particular tree city or any tree gave a city, and from there researchers could put a dollar figure on a tree, an approach that fit a larger trend of environmentalists trying to show the value of natural resources in monetary terms. Cities around the country and world began implementing the technology and started to notice additional patterns. In London, for instance, officials found that in areas with greater tree canopy coverage, residents took markedly fewer prescription antidepressants. One neighborhood in Chicago found that a tree initiative saved each resident nearly $100 in heating and cooling cost. In New York City, advocates armed with statistics about the financial impact of trees launched a hugely ambitious and ultimately successful effort to plant 1 million trees in the city within 10 years. Today, scientists in New York are using tree maps to show areas most in need, places where trees could help cool neighborhoods, heavily populated with elderly, minority, and impoverished residents. Around the world, as scientists mapped more and more trees, they understood better how urban forests affect everything from land use to natural disaster mitigation. Baltimore was the first place where we did the whole city, Mr. Grove says. Now we have done the entire Chesapeake Bay watershed. We've done the whole northeastern U.S. It would cost some money, but it's possible to do the entire U.S., which would be transformative. Baltimore is perhaps an unexpected model for green management. The city has not been building a reputation for governmental effectiveness recently. During the first week of May, Mayor Catherine Pugh resigned amid corruption allegations, while a week earlier, a former city police officer was sentenced to 9 years in prison for helping run a drug gang with other officers. National press about Baltimore, when there is any, tends to focus on the negative, the violent crime, the ingrained poverty, the struggles of its police force and school system. But what the headlines don't often share is Baltimore's long-standing environmental focus. Sitting on the Chesapeake Bay, the city is headquarters for numerous researchers and environmental organizations studying and protecting the country's largest estuary. It was this work that led to the city's leading role in urban ecology. In the late 1990s, scientists were trying to figure out how to reduce the amount of nitrogen in the bay. For years, agricultural runoff and urban pollution had been despoiling the ecosystem. Because of other research done in more rural areas, scientists believed that one solution was to plant trees alongside streams and inlets. But when they started testing, explains Mr. Grove, they discovered that for a number of biological reasons, a better way to reduce nitrogen in the Chesapeake Bay was to plant trees throughout Baltimore. Soon, the National Science Foundation took interest in the work and funded what would end up being a 20-year ecological study in the city. It was one of the first big investments in urban ecology, Mr. Grobe says, and the roots of the Tree Map Initiative. Now, Mr. Dio, the city arborist, uses that tree map regularly. Along with the age, location, and species of trees, his department can harness the technology to know which of the city's 2.6 million trees need pruning, whether any are sick, and which neighborhoods are due for tree maintenance. This way, he says, we make sure those trees are not falling down in a storm, not becoming a nuisance to the neighborhood. We don't wait for it to be a complaint. Not only does this keep residents happy, but also maintains canopy coverage. Large, older trees have far more leaf span, and thus ecological impact, than newly planted trees. We all love the new tree plantings, Mr. Deal says. We like to get our pictures taken, and there we are with the shovels and the school children all around. But when I got here, the concern was the mortality rate. How many of the new trees are still alive 4 or 5 years later? Mr. Deal arrived in the city 8 years ago. He had just retired from the U.S. Department of the Army, where he was a civilian in charge of managing the 12,000-tree Arlington National Cemetery. Some people were surprised when they heard that Mr. Deal was planning to spend his retirement working for Baltimore, and in a position that, as Mr. Grobe says, requires him to be able not only to cut down a tree and cut up a tree, but also be one of the most patient people in the world and deal with disasters, end of quote. But with the laid-back vibe of his California upbringing, Mr. Deal responds to questions about this with a shrug and a smile. I think it can make a difference, he says. And between the tree canopy and the status of urban forestry here, we are making a difference. He moved to a neighborhood close enough to bike to forestry headquarters, the entrance of which is now graced by a sculpture of Dr. Seuss's Lorax, wearing hiking sandals. Mr. Deal says he found a city far different from what the headlines and reputation suggested. Baltimore had not only a deep scientific base, he says, but also great neighborhoods, a revitalizing downtown, and the sort of community activism that makes environmental innovation possible. We're at the forefront of a lot of green infrastructure, he says. We have a lot to champion. Across from his office desk is a stuffed raven, a reference to either hometown poet Edgar Allan Poe or the professional football team, depending on one's inclination, and a rubber rat, the tongue-in-cheek city mascot. Nearby are bumper stickers and posters for many of the city's environmental nonprofits. One of Mr. Deal's jobs is to coordinate these different organizations. Together, they work under the title Tree Baltimore Umbrella. Tree Baltimore is one word with a capital T and a capital B, and use the city tree map data to coordinate tree plantings and maintenance, neighborhood cleanups, and various other initiatives. There is Blue Water Baltimore, which works to restore the quality of the city's various waterways. The Baltimore Orchard Project helps plant fruit trees in community gardens around the city, and Baltimore Green Space both works as a community land trust and helps preserve, quote, forest patches, usually small and often overlooked swaths of woodland that dot cities. Springfield Woods is not on Google Maps, but walk to the end of Springfield Avenue or across the street from the low-slung red brick Maplewood apartment complex on St. George's Avenue, and it is there, a cool bit of forest in the historically African-American neighborhood of Wilson Park on the northwest side of Baltimore. Butch Berry has spent most of his life going into Springfield Woods. When he was a kid in the 1960s, he remembers playing there, often by the stream that still babbles through the trees. When he came back to the family home in the early 2010s, after working as a cartoonist in Los Angeles, he was drawn to it again. But by then, the woods were different. People dumped trash at the edge of the 3.5-acre parcel. A handful of homeless people had made a campsite in the middle. Poison ivy had snarled the underbrush. Mr. Berry asked around about whether anyone in the neighborhood association was doing anything to keep up the woods. Eventually, he started just picking up trash himself. I figured, what are they going to do, arrest me for picking up litter? He said with a laugh. Later, he reached out to Baltimore Green Space to see if the group might help him take care of Springfield Woods. He had heard of the organization because it had recently gotten involved in trying to save another forest patch, Wilson Woods, a few blocks away. As Katie Lotcher, the group's executive director, describes it, area residents had contacted Baltimore Green Space because they heard that a landowner planned to mow down a vacant acre of old hardwood trees that residents had long used. Until then, Baltimore Green Space had mostly focused on community gardening projects. But the idea of a city forest was intriguing. It was a situation, Ms. Lauder says, where people simply didn't see a natural resource in front of them. Sometimes folks have, in the wider environmental world, a block about thinking of nature in urban spaces, she says. I say that as someone who grew up in Baltimore, I got my master's in environmental education and came back, and I had never noticed these spaces. After a number of meetings with residents who asked to know about the mini forest, she reached out to scientists who could help study the ecological impacts of forest patches and explore how people use them. The group discovered that not only did the forest patches provide important habitats for native species and significant cooling effects for surrounding homes, but also they often played an important role in neighborhoods. There's a mythology that people in urban environments don't like nature, Ms. Lauter says. The truth is that people use and love the woods. Their research found that the vast majority of some 80 forest patches in the city showed signs of human stewardship. Trails, benches, or places where people had weeded. Or there was a person like Mr. Barry who had started picking up trash. Ms. Lauter decided to use Baltimore's Green Spaces community activism model to protect these mini forests. Today, the group supports neighborhood forest stewards who take the lead in caring for woods. On one recent morning, for instance, Charles Brown was working on the edge of the remaining half acre of Wilson Woods. Mr. Brown, a retired cab driver, comes by every few days to work on the trail, pull out invasive vines, or plant new seedlings. I used to drive by this every day and didn't notice it, he says. Now, it's one of the places in his neighborhood that gives him joy. It's peaceful. You get a sense of accomplishment. He pauses and gives a wry smile, known to gardeners everywhere. If you ever finish anything. Meanwhile, Mr. Barry's Springfield Woods has become a showcase for urban forest patches. Since Baltimore Green Space began its partnership with him, volunteers from around the neighborhood and beyond have come into the woods to pull out the poison ivy, build trails, and haul out trash. We found everything in here, from a vacuum cleaner to an old gun, Mr. Barry says. Now there are benches and clearings and a sign at the edge of the forest welcoming visitors. Mr. Barry and Baltimore Green Space have hosted events in the woods, including an edible hike in which participants cook food harvested from the forest. When the group recently organized a haunted woods evening, more than 90 people attended. There is still trash, but much less of it. Mr. Barry has watched as some neighbors who once used the woods as a dump now yell at people throwing litter from their cars. Between the tree canopy and the urban forestry here, we are making a difference, says Mr. Deal. It all ties together. It ties into social equity, into climate adaptation, everything. That concludes this feature article and our time together for the Christian Science Monitor this week, here on the radio that reads to the Tri-State WRRS. I'm Philip Moore. Thanks for joining me.